Good afternoon, Nuevo listeners. I know it's been some time since I've last posted a podcast, and I know that you may have noticed that I may have deleted others. One of the primary reasons I wanted to do that was because I wanted to put some more thought into the direction of the podcast. This is kind of experimental and experiential, experiment that I'm undergoing. But I hope that you can hang in there with me, most especially today. And I will preface that with respect to today's Nuevo podcast, it will be lengthy. I cannot say that it will be less than an hour. I will shoot for 1 hour. But the reason that I'm going to make it so long is because I do think that, in my opinion, that this particular topic is very important. It's very important to each and every one of us, not on a federal level, but now we're talking about a state level, and particularly with all the citizens in the state of Texas. It deals with public education. So if you have sons, if you have daughters, if you have nieces or nephews, grandchildren, or any family members or friends who have children that go to Texas public school, be it an elementary school or middle school or high school, this affects them. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of go a little bit slow into the background of it and kind of loop around. I'm going to say that the big picture is that currently we are in, as of right now, right now as I speak, I just finished visiting with a committee on Texas public education in the Capitol, and it deals with the 86th legislative session and financial education reform. And so this reform will take place during 2021. And so there are some good things about it and there are some bad things about it, but it's important that you as citizens, you as individuals, understand the ins and outs of it. And I will end with that, but I will begin with kind of providing you a little bit of a backdrop with respect to how we came here and our Texas public school system, which I am sure more or less you guys know. I'll start off by saying that in present time, we have around 330,000 teachers in Texas. So we have around 330,000 teachers in public school system in Texas that are teaching children that are in the amount of over 5 million students in all our 254 counties. Now, the average salary for teachers is around $55,000 a year. Now, about 15 years ago to 20 years ago, teachers had an average length of tenure at their employment of about 7 to 10 years. We've now reached a teacher crisis where teachers are now turning over and leaving the profession in general or jumping around so much so that they eventually leave. And the average length of stay for public school teachers has now reached a point of 2 to 3 years. And there's a number of reasons for that, not only salary, and I'll get into it right now. And so basically, it began before this, but I'll go ahead and start. It began around 2003. And during 2003, we had our Texas governor, who is Rick Perry. And through Rick Perry and his legislature, a bill was passed through both chambers of the legislature, and it created a law. And it was known as Senate Bill 815. And what the law did is it created universal standards that every single school district in the state of Texas needed to abide by and follow and teach its students kids from an elementary, middle school to high school level. And they were required to follow it. And what they noted that these universal standards were to be called were Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills Standards, otherwise known as TEKS, T-E-K-S. So all of a sudden, teachers from every single county in the state of Texas now had to comply to teach in accordance to these TEK standards. What if a teacher or a principal or a school district decided not to comply with these TEK standards and teach children according to these TEK standards? Well, the state of Texas said, you're going to be penalized. You're going to be penalized to the extent that we have the authority to revoke your school and your school district's in accreditation completely and shut you down. So that's a pretty draconian, that's a pretty high kind of penalty that these teachers did not want to face. So all of a sudden, everyone kind of went step in form and started to move down these TEK standards. Now, in addition to these TEK standards, in around 2003, the legislature said, hey, you know what? We need to make sure that these teachers are being held accountable and teaching these students about these TEK standards. And the way we're going to do that is by implementing an examination. And that examination was called the Texas Assessment of Knowledge and Skills exam, that's known as the TAKS test, T-A-K-S. So in 2003, a law was passed that said these standards called TEKS, T-E-K-S, must be followed and your students must pass a test called TAKS, T-A-K-S, in order to show that that you are properly teaching them, and that if they fail, you are going to have negative repercussions. And so all of a sudden, high stakes testing came into play, and I'm sure that you've heard those words before. And so it totally redefined teaching for teachers and how they taught their students and what they taught their students, because these tests were so important that teachers were now forced to, quote unquote, teach to the test, to not get fired, to not get demoted, to not have their school not receive public funding, and to not have their school be shut down, or even worse, have their school district be shut down. And so that was in about 2003. And so about 8 years later, we're talking about, I would say 2011, the legislature again said, you know what, Texas needs to revise these standards. And are we going to revise them to make them easier? No. Unfortunately, they revised them and they made them even more difficult. They created an even more difficult standard model for elementary, middle school, and high school. And so they replaced the TEK standards for a more rigorous set of standards, and they actually even replaced the test. The test that was formerly known as the TAKS test was replaced with a more rigorous test called the STAR, the State of Texas Assessment of Academic Readiness, the State of Texas Assessment of Academic Readiness Exam, otherwise known as the STAR. And so the STAR test was even more exhaustive, and it provided a heightened level of pressure to students, to teachers, to administrators and principals and school districts and superintendents, because the result for having a certain amount of a school not pass or fail this STAR exam would result in deep penalties that included less funding, that included individuals from the state, the Texas Education Agency, coming to the school and essentially taking over completely, and to the point where if they failed multiple times, the school would ultimately be shut down. The students would be forced to go to another school, and the teachers would all lose their jobs, and some ISDs even shut down themselves. So, in present time, we still take the STAR from elementary to middle school to high school, and the pressure on these teachers and these students is so grave that myself, as a graduate student for curriculum and instruction, I have taken the liberty and the opportunity and the privilege to go visit some of these schools and substitute from elementary to middle school to high school level, to visit both the students, the teachers, and the administrators, to kind of get my feet on the ground and see how they're doing. And it's not good, at least in Bexar County. And I would say that that is the same literally across the state. It's not good from my own perspective, because the students are under an intense amount of pressure to pass this STAR exam, not just for the sake of eventually being able to graduate, but for the sake of not having their teacher fired, not having their school shut down or intervened upon, not having the superintendent or principal or administration be penalized by these draconian legal repercussions that's been placed on them. So these students are literally sitting down, about 7 to 8 hours a day, just going through paperwork in different categories about that test upon these standards. The teachers themselves, they are absolutely disheartened. Teaching, in my opinion, and why I got into curriculum and instruction, is because I believe with all my heart that this is one of the few and last professions that individuals enter into for reasons just to help society. No one becomes a teacher to become rich, right? There has to be a passion there, a passion and a love to teach and have other students learn. Now I see teachers, veterans, and both young teachers alike saying that they feel like a machine, just regurgitating what has been placed upon them, that's essentially a book that basically they read to help these students pass these tests. Creativity has gone out the window. Flexibility for the teachers has gone out the window. Any latitude in teaching style has gone out the window. And I've seen teachers that are just so disheartened that they don't even have the ability to fight and lobby against the state legislature to make a change. And the same goes for their administrators, their principals, and all the way to the school board and superintendents across nearly practically all the 254 counties in the state of Texas. And then to top it off, they have to deal with a low salary, very little pay raises and freezes that last for years, and out-of-pocket expenses that they do daily to make sure that their students can properly learn. And a lot of these teachers, like I mentioned before, they just have nothing left. And the total, the totality of these standards with the STAR exam, with the draconian legal consequences placed upon them, with the increased class sizes, with the salary that has been stagnant, and the high rate of inflation has created this crisis where teachers are in Texas are now only being able, now averaging 2 to 3 years in the teaching profession, and many are just leaving the teaching profession altogether. Now, that's the background of the Texas public school system from 2003 to present. And so this kind of dives in into today's topic. We are now entering into the 86th legislative session, which began in January and will run through the end of May. Now, this is very important because this is a time where ideas become bills, and bills go through the legislature, and the legislature can pass it on to the governor, and the governor can sign it and become law. Now, I'm sure that as many of you know, Governor Greg Abbott has mentioned that two emergency items that he wants to most definitively address during this 86th legislative session is public school finance reform and a property tax decrease, which is a little contradictory in nature, and I'll kind of discuss that very shortly as we kind of go through a little bit more about this Governor Perry's emergency line items. So, Governor Perry said this recently, and what happened was, during our last legislative session, which was the 85th Texas legislative session, there was a commission established. And the commission is a group of legislatures that is tasked to study and make recommendations about something. They were tasked to make a recommendation and study Texas's public school finance, areas that need reform, how can reform happen, and then present a final report that would then be utilized to create a bill that would eventually establish a new Texas financing reform beginning in year 2020, moving forward. That final bill is known as, that final report is known as the Texas Commission on Public School Finance, Funding on Impact, Equitable Funding for Students Who Need It Most. It was finalized on December 31st, 2018, and it is a public record. It is about I say a little bit less than 200 pages long, and I've read it thoroughly in detail, and I'm going to depth into items that I think that are important, and things that I think that I are okay, and things that I think that need revision, and how you can help. And so overall, I'd like to begin by saying I applaud the governor, and I applaud the commission for finally being able to dive in into a study and a topic that has been so dearly needed for the state of Texas in regard to how our students learn and how our teachers teach and the pressures that they have and how we can fix them along with fixing school funding. And so moving from there, the report consisted of over 80 hours testimony of 155 different stakeholders, the Texas Education Agency, the Texas Higher Education Board, classroom educators, campus leaders, parents, researchers, nonprofits, foundations, and business interests. And so at the end of the day, what's happening right now, what I just finished doing, is now the committee is spending 2 days to basically hear public opinion about what they think about the report. And so I was there to hear individuals, former legislatures, former individuals that were, part of the chairman of the board for the Texas of Education, and their ideas and thoughts. And they had a lot of great ideas and thoughts that I'll talk about. And so the commission basically created this report, and it outlined 13 main recommendations, okay? And the 13 main recommendations, I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm going to go through ones that I think I disagree with. I'm going to explain to you why, and I'm going to allow you to make your own decision on the same, okay? So, let's see here. The first one that I'd like to go over is what is called Texas school finance systems should shift a portion of its focus towards outcome-based funding, targeting two critical pre-K through 12 gates, reflecting current high levels of academic melt. What does that mean, right? So the way that our school system is currently financed is the following, okay? Texas public schools across the United States, as you know, are funded by local property taxes. And so what happens is that as of today, and for the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years, school districts and schools have been funded by your home property tax. And so whatever district you live in, a part of your property tax bill that you pay every year goes to fund that public school. And so what happened a long time ago was that individuals, legislatures, advocates started to notice, and they said, hey, if Texas public schools are being funded by local property taxes, and that these local property taxes are going into the schools within our district, Well, you know, obviously, in San Antonio and in Corpus Christi, there in Corpus Christi, there's a west side of town, a south side of town, and in San Antonio, there's a south side of town and a north side of town. And basically, what I'm saying is that there's a rich side of town and a poor side of town where, you know, the homes are valued less, the appraisal is valued less. And so, as you know, your tax bill is based on your house's appraisal value. So what these advocates and parents and teachers and everybody started to realize were that if we live on the poor side of town, then that means that because my house is valued less and because a portion of my tax bill goes to fund schools and only schools in my district, then all the people in my neighborhood are doing the same thing. And just for example's sake, we're paying $10 to our school because our houses are valued are appraised at a low value. And they said, but If I go to the south side of town, those houses are valued 3 to 4 to 5 times greater than what my house is valued at. And so that means that the portion of their taxes that go to their school is going to be way more. And with their neighbors, that school in their district is going to get more money than the school in our district. So that means that our students, our kids, our children that live on the west side of town versus the south side of town are going to be treated differently. That means that the students on the west side of town may not get the right books or the right computers or the best teachers or, you know, the best even desk or locker rooms or just basic necessities to learn, while students in these schools in the rich side of town are getting high-end computers, high-end technology, the best of the best. That is absolutely not fair. And so what they did was they filed a lawsuit actually in San Antonio, Texas. That lawsuit went very high, and I believe it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. I believe it was the Edgewood lawsuit. And so what that ended up happening was they said, you know what? The court said, you know what? You're right. You guys are right, plaintiffs, people that live on the west side of town. This is not fair. So what we're going to do is we're going to create something called the Capture Law. And we're going to nickname it the Robin Hood Law. And what we're going to do is we're going to say that people that live on the rich side of town, their taxes will be used to fund their schools and their districts to a certain point, to a certain extent. And anything above that extent, those extra funds will be sent to the state of Texas, which will then be redistributed to you guys on the west side of town so that it basically evens things out. Kind of like Robin Hood, you know, rob from the rich and give to the poor a little bit. That's why the nickname is as such. And so that's how it's been until present time. The Texas Commission of Public Finance wants to do away with that. And I'll let you know why, and you can decide whether or not you think that is a good or good not good idea, okay? But basically, that's how schools are funded. They're also funded by the state. However, within these last 10 years, the state has decreased the funding for public schools by 10%. And so essentially, public schools in the entire state of Texas are being funded purely on property taxes and the redistribution of money to a certain extent from the wealthier neighborhoods to the poorer neighborhoods to try to even them out as best they can. For reasons that I'll discuss in a minute, as I mentioned, I'll kind of discuss why they want to take that away. But in regard to the Texas school finance system, that's what it is. And one of the recommendations is that they want to shift its focus towards outcome-based funding, targeting two critical pre-K gates, reflecting current high levels of academic melt. So basically what it's saying is this: hey, we want to pump in money. The state wants to pump in money into Texas public schools, which is great because Texas public schools are in desperate need of money. We want to pump in $800 million of money, actually, into Texas public schools. But we think that it's best for us to do that by deciding who gets the money on outcome-based funding. Now, the word outcome-based funding means basically whoever passes a certain examination or standard will get the money, and whoever doesn't will not get the money. So the outcome of what this standard will be the basis of the funding, outcome-based funding. So the very first one that they were recommending, or they're basically tying the money to, is for early literacy, which is really important. Like, children need to learn how to read, right? And they're saying, well, what grade level? They decided that third grade children in the state of Texas and reading. And they said, okay, this is what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we're going to provide $400 million, a portion of the $400 million, and it's going to be based on third graders and their reading proficiency and how third graders do in reading. And to make things even, because we know that, you know, the rich side of town may have it easier than the poor, this is what we're going to do. For every low-income student, a low-income student, generally reduced or free lunch, that achieves this third grade reading level, we're going to give that school $3,400 per student. $3,400 per student. That kind of entices the school to do its best, or the goal is to entice its school to do its best to help these third graders meet that third grade reading proficiency so that they can get $3,400 per student for each student that reaches that goal, right? And they said, the commission report says, now for every non-low-income student achieving a third grade reading proficiency, we're going to give that non-low-income school, the wealthy school, we're only going to give them $1,450. And so the goal is that because we're giving the poor school more money when those students pass, and we're giving the rich school less money when those students pass, everything will even out. But simple calculations show that that is in fact not the case, because there are some districts where only 5% of their students meet the third grade reading proficiency, and that 5% is generally at the low income, poor schools. And I've seen where in a higher income school that 58% of that those third grade students meet the proficiency of a third grade. So I'm going to give you an example, okay? So if a school has 1,359 third graders and it's a poor school, but only 5% of them meet the reading proficiency, that means that only about 68 students of the 1,359 total meet the reading proficiencies. So that 68 students times the how much they were going to get. Remember, 3,400 per student. So 3,400 per student times 68 students. That low-income school will be given $231,200, which sounds great, right? $231,200. However, let's go back to that rich school that has a 58% passage rate and no low-income students, and they have 1,518 students. So if 58% of 1,518 students means that 888 third graders read at a third grade level, which means that according to the Texas Commission of Public Finance report, what they want to do is for each of those 888 kids, they're going to give the school $1,450, less than the $3,400 for the poor kids, right? But there's more of the kids in the rich side of town that passed. On the poor side of town, only 67 kids passed. And on the rich side of town, 880 kids passed. And even though the state is giving more, 3,400 to the poor school and only 1,450 to the rich school, if you multiply the rich school's number of kids, 880 times the $1,450, that rich school is going to get $1,276,638. Now, if you think that that's an exaggeration, I used actual real data to show a distinction from passage rates for third grade readings for districts that are poor and for districts that are not poor. And the differentiation is so huge that it will not create equity. It will not equalize the rich school and the poor school, and the poor school will end up getting shafted at the end of the day. And so my first recommendation is I am against 100% tying funding to public schools based on this outcome-based funding. No. We need to give an equitable amount to all the schools, and it should not be based on testing, okay? So I am against that. You can decide the matter, but I showed you an example on how that can very easily become non-equitable. Now, the second thing that they're doing is they said, okay, that's number one. Number two is the other, we'll give the other portion of the $800 million for high schools that basically make their kids either career ready, basically meaning that they get an associate's degree by the time they graduate high school, they get accepted to college, or they enter to the military, and they don't need to be remediation. They don't need to be basically retaught. And so that is, and so they say, high schools, if you guys do that, then we're going to give you a portion of that $800 million. I don't like that either, because basically at the rich school, and this is just my assumption, I'm going to bet that about 90% are all going to go to college, right? And so it's going to be easy. They're going to go to college, and that's it. They go to college and they move on. But for the poor kids, because these teachers and or these administrators and principals and school districts need this money, and they're looking at these high school kids, their scores, they know that they're not going to get into college. What are they going to do? What are they going to do in order to try to get that money? They're going to want to force them to either which I don't think is bad, to either get like a associate's degree in high school, which is a better of the two, or maybe force them to go to the military when they don't want to, and not knowing that they're going to the military because that school has a self-interest of making sure that they get a portion of that $800 million. So I don't like that, because I feel like it's going to force not the rich schools, because they're going to go to college or whatever, and they get to choose if they want to go to the military or they want to just get an associate's, but the poor kids who may not meet the college standards are going to only be left with basically getting an associate's or going to the military, and maybe they don't want to get an associate's, or maybe they don't want to go to the military, but the school district is going to kind of push it and say, we need this money to keep running, so do the best you can to try to get them on the track to maybe go to the military. And those students, they're young kids, they're going to think, they trust their counselors and teachers, and the pressure that their counselors and teachers are doing is getting from up above. And so that, I don't think that that is right. And so I disagree with that as well. So basically, I disagree with recommendation number 6. I believe that outcome-based funding is wrong. And so I would say to my representative, I am against outcome-based funding 100%. I believe that funding for our public schools of the $800 million needs to be done equitably, and it should not be tied to either early literacy scores or not be tied to whether a child goes to college, military, or gets an associate's degree, because these schools are already strapped as it is, and they need the money now. You don't need to add any strings. They just need the help. And so don't tie any strings to it, because that's not right to tie any strings to that. The next one that I want to talk about is recommendation number 7. Recommendation number 7 is that they want to create a program to give teachers raises, right? And I think that there's going to be a standard raise for all teachers, hopefully, just a flat raise no matter what. But they want to create something that they're calling the creation of an effective educator, that's a buzzword, allotment for districts wishing to differentiate compensation to pay their strongest educators higher salaries sooner in their career. So before this, as of right now, teachers' salaries are increased based on seniority. Teachers that just started get paid the less, and teachers that put in their time and effort and work year in and year out will get a higher salary, a little raise, a little bump every year. What they want to do, though, is that they want to say, hey, this is what we're going to do. Teachers that are top teachers, teachers that basically are evaluated based on items of TEA, based on how their students do on test assessments, teachers that have their students pass more frequently in the test, well, we're going to pay them more money. We're going to pay these teachers more money because more money is going to incentivize these teachers to work harder, because we're under the false belief that there's lazy teachers out there that just don't care, and that's why these students are failing. I disagree with this because I believe that this is a false premise. I believe that the entire thing is based on a false premise of lazy teachers. I believe that teachers are not lazy. I believe that if anything, they are worn out, beat out, tired, and just beaten up, but they manage to make it to school day in and day out. And I also believe that you can get a teacher, your greatest, your whatever you think your greatest teacher is, from the richest school in a district who has students that are constantly passing their standardized testing. We'll say a fifth grade teacher. I want that fifth grade teacher, and I would like to study done and get that fifth grade teacher on that rich side of town, and take that fifth grade teacher and take them to the poor side of town. Take them to the poor side of town and see how they do. See how they do with students and the students' test passage rates, because I guarantee you these teachers are going to see things that they've never seen before. They're going to see students that come in with lice. They're going to see students that have been abused. They're going to see students that haven't eaten for days. They're going to see students who are wearing the same clothes. They're going to see students who don't speak English. They're going to see students with psychological problems. They're going to see students who are hurting. They're going to see parents who are good but just are not educated. They're going to see blue-collar parents who work day in and day out but don't have the ability to read to their children because they're at work. And this is cumulatively affecting that child's life. And so all of a sudden, I believe that these rich teachers will realize that they are now truly not only a teacher, but a mother, a mentor, a father, a leader, a dad, a coach, a motivator, and if necessary, someone to put them in a safe place if CPS is even required, because I guarantee you that does happen. And I believe that if you do it in reverse as well, if you put a teacher who may not be having students pass in the bad side of town or the poor side of town, but doing her level best, and you put them in the rich side of town, I bet you that that teacher will now have students passing their test more than she's ever or he's ever seen in their whole life, to a level that is super high. And all of a sudden, that teacher who was a failing teacher because she happened to teach on the bad side of town is an effective teacher. So what I'm saying is that when you the students that live on the rich side of town, the reality is that they have advantages that students don't have on the poor side of town. The students on the rich side of town don't come to school hungry. They don't come to school generally abused psychologically or physically. They have parents who read to them. They have parents who are professionals that they learn from. They have siblings that are older than them that are college bound or have gone to college. They understand college. They have parents that can understand work assignments. And so all of that cumulatively makes a difference in the test scores. And so what I'm saying is that it is wrong to tie in salary increases for what the Texas Commission of Public School Finance calls an effective teacher. I believe that teachers are effective, but I believe that there are things that are just unfortunately outside their control. And to award a teacher extra money because they so happen to have students that may be more advantaged than other teachers who do not, I believe is absolutely unfair. And it's demoralizing as teachers as a whole who have for decades already have been dealing with a low pay, stagnant, that is not on par with this rapid inflation with increased class size. So what I would say in sum is I, representative, am absolutely against your creation of compensating your effective your language, as you put it, the strongest educators with higher salaries, because I believe that all educators are strong educators and they are just put into different environments. And so that's the second thing that I would say to my representative. The third one, and there, I only have two more, and then I'll end with some comments. But the second one, the third one, is one that I was against, but now I'm on the fence because of a former state representative and someone who testified today. His name is Jimmy Don Acock. I respect him. He's a Republican, but I respect him because I thought that his arguments were logical. I thought his arguments were thorough, and I thought that his arguments came from a place that was not based on some type of self-interest. And he also was a commission member, and so it has to do with this recapture, basically the Robin Hood. And so, remember I mentioned in the beginning that until now, school districts have been funded on the Robin Hood law, which basically means that the richer districts will give money to the poorer districts to even the playing field out for everybody. Well, the goal for the legislative session is to put an end to recapture. And to put an end to recapture, because there are some cities, such as Austin, that the values of their property are skyrocketing to such an extent that they are becoming overwhelming to the point where a lot of money is being given to poor districts. I was initially against it because I thought that, if it evens it out, it evens it out. Right, I would say that my argument for it is that the argument presented by Jimmy Don Acock said that financially and fiscally, it's unfeasible to continue it. He provided a compelling argument. And so I will say, I will leave it at that. And I will basically say, I would not tell my representative I am against that anymore. But I would want to know more about it. And I would want to make sure that, albeit that I respect Jimmy Don Acock, that his calculations were in fact correct, because that is why I am basing my opinion on doing an end to the recapture Robin Hood law, is it has changed. One thing that they left is in regard to special education. They didn't put any money into special education, and they said that that they basically are going to wait to implement a special formula. I would disagree with that. I think special education in Texas is absolutely on the rise. I think that it's something that is critical to elementary, middle school, and high school students and teachers. And I think that money most definitely should be allotted to special education, and that waiting is wrong. And so what I would say to my legislature is that I would say, in regard to your waiting for allotting money to special education, I disagree. And I believe that you need to set aside a reasonable and equitable amount of money to properly fund our special education needs and our exceptional learners, and not have to wait until this theoretical formula is conjured up. And so, okay, we took a quick break, I'm going to finalize here in the next 15 minutes. What we've been talking about was the Texas Commission of Public School Finance final report, and the hearings that have taken place today are still taking place now. And what will subsequently occur is that this will go into the legislature through a bill, wherein it will be debated, and your voice as a constituent through your state House of Representative legislature in your state senator will vote on key issues regarding this public school finance based upon the phone calls and the emails and the correspondence that you make to them and how regularly you make those to them. So make sure you take note on that. And with that, I wanted to kind of finalize a lot of the Texas Commission of Public School Finance final reports, ideas, thoughts, and recommendations were based on the Dallas Independent School District. Back in 2015, the Dallas Independent School District implemented a program known as ACE, Accelerated Campus of Excellence, which was basically a program or an initiative that focused on underperforming campuses, and it changed basically the leadership and the culture by basically implementing a new principal and basically changing the staffing plan, and in so doing, it focused highly on extending the school day, on extending the expectations of the students, and on standardized testing. And at the end of the day, what happened was that it was successful for the Dallas Independent School District. And you'll note within the final report of the Texas Commission of Public School Finance that the district superintendent, Michael Hinojosa, actually testified on behalf of the ACE program and, of course, was a proponent for that and wants to and says that that is a excellent blueprint to apply across the board to the remaining counties in the entire state of Texas. Albeit that I do believe that Superintendent Michael Hinojosa has the most well intentions, I would disagree with him, and I would disagree with him because of the following reasons. Number one, we have 254 counties in the state of Texas, and we are discussing only one independent school district, with the Dallas Independent School District. I live in San Antonio. San Antonio is Bexar County. It is one county of the 254 counties, and to my last recollection, it has 17 school districts, 17 independent school districts with one county, and take into consideration one county, 17 independent school districts, and we have 254 counties in the state of Texas. In short, what may work for one district does not in any form or fashion verify, validate, or even from a scientific point of view, confirm that it will in any shape or form work for the remaining 254 counties in the state of Texas. In addition to that, what District Superintendent Michael Hinojosa and the Texas Commission on Public Finance are looking to do are to take many of the recommendations that have been implemented by the ACE program and impute them, implement them, and apply them to the 330,000 teachers in the state of Texas and the more than 5 million students currently enrolled in every public school within the state of Texas. And they want to begin this process within 2020. I believe that every district within a county, has its own unique teaching style, its unique culture within San Antonio alone, and its 17 districts. I can guarantee you that these 17 districts have their own learning style, their own culture, their own background, their own way of teaching the things that work for them. And so for that reason, I disagree with the Texas Commission on Public School Finance using and utilizing as an example the ACE initiative that was successful in the Dallas Independent School District and magnify and apply that to the entire state of Texas. I'm going to end with just a couple more things, and that will be it for me for the night. I'll end with a couple of notations that were in the appendix of the Texas Commission of School Finance Reform. Texas House of Representatives Diego M. Bernal, he wrote back in December of 2018 that while there were some things that he did agree with, which included the creation of new dual language allotment, which I agree with as well, he did address his concern about the tension that was being had between the sources of revenue and property tax relief and investment in education, and that he says that this must be addressed prior to any law being enacted. He also recommended that how these recommendations would affect individual districts as well as the individual recommendations effects on equity, and that he stated that these effects remain unknown. He believes that the debate between funding schools based on need versus funding schools based on student performance warrants further consideration by the legislature. The superintendent, Douglas Killian, from Pflugerville ISD, noted that he had several concerns regarding the allotment of incentive programs that were recommended within the Commission of Public Finance final report. He stated in a letter directly that the third grade reading, quote unquote, quote, the third grade reading allotment does not appropriately address the funding of full day pre-K. The commission heard testimony that participation in pre-kindergarten had an effect not only on third grade success, but on post-secondary resources as well. Armed with that level of findings and with the no organized statewide pre-K efforts and standards in place when these results were produced, why would the committee legislature not choose to fund pre-K with the high quality pre-K guidelines now in place? He also stated that with respect to the teacher compensation program, without increases in basic allotments to help fund teachers and pay staff to keep up with market pressures, funding an incentive program only is like providing dessert without the funds for the basic meal. With the state unemployment rate hovering around 3%, we are effectively fully employed. Finding qualified and certified candidates to enter the profession or take high demand jobs is difficult without raising wages. These incentive plans provide funds only for tested targeted areas. We have high needs like computer science teachers, health profession teachers, bilingual teachers, nurses, police officers, and many more that will not be touched by the state assessment-based compensation plans. I urge the commission and legislature to be more mindful on the needs and the important role they play in graduating students who are safe, healthy, and college, career, and and military ready. While crafting an updated financial structure, the need for local discretionary funding is critical, and the vast majority of any revenue to public schools should be designated for discretionary use, since the needs of districts vary widely. Additional funding for school districts should be provided in a manner that supports the local needs with local control. And he says, finally, let us not rely on a single statewide assessment to define our success as an educational system, which I think I agree with wholeheartedly. And I think that was absolutely courageous for PhD Douglas Killian to make that statement. I'm going to finalize with Jimmy Acock and some words of wisdom that I saw that he made today, let you know what they are, and why I thought that I took note of them so greatly. So Jimmy Don Acock is his name. Jimmy Don Acock is he's a Republican. He served in the Texas State of Representative 54 in the Bell County area. He is a Texas A&M alma mater. He's a veterinarian. And he also served on the public, the House Committees of Public Education and Appropriation. So he did exactly what this committee is doing now some time ago. And so he came in and he testified today, and without any interest, in my opinion, he kind of let the current House Committee members know what mistakes he made, and how they can prevent committee members from doing the same. He believed on recapture issue that in his opinion it was an unsustainable, and therefore he understood the need to begin to close that down, as I previously mentioned. But one thing that he mentioned that he definitely was not a fan of was these new high stakes test taking. He said that they should be used for children only on an individual basis. They should not be used for funding, and that they should be used more as a guide and more as just kind of an instruction learning tool only. With respect to teacher pay, he stated explicitly that the local needs in the state of Texas and the number of counties that I mentioned, that they vary so much across the state that the committee needs to be very careful on how they direct that money, implicitly saying you should be careful prior to linking any type of standardized testing to teacher pay. And others mentioned that with respect to testing, if these standardized testing is, if the objective is to test the educational system itself, as opposed to determining, whether a student graduates, and then determining the draconian repercussions faced by teachers, principals, administrators, staff, school districts, school boards, then testing is not even the most efficient option. That a more efficient option would be a simple survey. Another individual testified that student portfolios could be another way to assess knowledge. That this this idea that has proliferated nationally and is proliferating in the state of Texas as the only standard to assess knowledge, that being standardized test taking, is simply flawed, is simply simple-minded, and that with creative thinking, innovation, and with group engagement, community engagement, people believe that individuals believe that there are multitude of ways to assess knowledge, and that to remain committed on the standardized testing will only further perpetuate the stress that is placed upon students of all ages, from elementary, middle school, and high school, students amongst their peers, teachers, teacher cooperation, and the pressure had by each teacher, the administration, staff, school district, and that overall, that this is something that is something that is very dangerous. It's very dangerous for a public school system to continue to move forward, because what happens, and this is quote unquote from Jimmy Don Acock, it says that he says that these adults, teachers and administrators and staff members and school board members and superintendents, it creates perverse effects, perverse and unintended effects, because what occurs is, and what has occurred in the past is, we had gotten to the point, and there are instances in the state of Texas and other states wherein the pressure is so high that these adults resort to cheating in some form or fashion, because they need the money so much, and that undercuts the entire concept of learning, the value of learning, and it dives in and it undercuts the value of how we should be seen as an American culture and identity, as individuals who place values of truth, justice, and fair game above winning, above all. And so this is a Republican who is most definitely he's most definitely revered. He was a valedictorian. He's gone through, and he is a success story. Carries a lot of clout in what he says, and he, at 72 years old, I can say that, the words that he spoke were absolutely just wisdom from years of experience that I cannot even attest to. And so that's why I value his opinion so much. And so that's why I value the stance that he took on issues. So in short, what's going on and what can you do? In short, as you we just talked about for this last hour and 20 minutes, I discussed the origins of the way that the Texas public school system works, how it became more difficult over the years through the creation of more rigorous testing that changed over time with the current STAR test, and how teachers are and have always been becoming more and more stressed by overcrowded classes and underfunding schools and closing down schools and the pressure for test taking. And finally, how I do applaud the Texas legislature and Governor Abbott and that they created a commission to do a report on public finance. What is occurring now. I believe they're closing up the last hearing. And so this committee will then form a bill that will make its way through the state legislature, the state house, and the state senate. And the goal will be that by the end of May of this year, a decision will be made that will be passed by the House and the Senate and will be signed by Governor Abbott and become law for Texas public school finance for all Texas schools and for all Texas school teachers and for all Texas school students beginning in 2020. If any of the issues that I discussed today were of interest to you and you agreed with them or you disagreed with them, or if you want to speak to your representative, I cannot encourage you enough to dial your state House of Representative or your state senator and discuss with him what you agree or disagree with on the issues that I presented. And if you have any questions or concerns or comments that you'd like to have for me, please email me at Juan J. Maldonado, III, at protonmail.com. That's Juan J. Maldonado, III, at protonmail.com. I'll be more than happy to get back to you. If you want to know more about anything that I spoke of, or you have any confusion about anything, please feel free to get in touch with me. I'll be more than happy to respond. But this is most definitely an issue that warranted the hour and 20 minutes plus conversation, because this is an issue that will, in less than 1 year, and to the infinite future, affect your children and your family's children and your teachers, and will affect them on a daily basis. So really think about this. I wish you the best. The purpose, of course, of Nuevo is to present you with current events on social issues that are happening. This go-around is on Texas, on what, and on what you can do to combat complacency and to become a critical citizen in this democratic republic that we live in by becoming active and a regular advocate and to our representatives, be it on a local level, state level, or federal level. And in doing so, we will reshape our city, our county, our state, and our nation for the better for everyone. So with that, Nuevo listeners, God bless. Take care. I'll talk to you soon, and have a good night.